Okay, so and then the other question that'll be interesting is hopefully there is going to be an efficacy advantage. Of course, we don't know that, but then the issue is, well, how much side effects or toxicity will we see, or what should we expect if it turns out that it works in terms of the adjuvant setting? What are the problems generally that you see with
Yeah.
bevacizumab?
I mean, bevacizumab has potential risk in terms of side effects. I think we've become aware of gastrointestinal perforation in about 1.5 to 2% of patients, at least in the palliative setting.
Can you talk a little bit more about the bowel
Yeah.
perforation issue and what we know about it, not
Yeah.
just in terms of incidence, but also what's going on there?
Yeah. So the first trial that put bevacizumab onto the map in the palliative setting of colorectal cancer had chemotherapy plus or minus bevacizumab. About 900 patients in this trial, and this arm that contained bevacizumab had 6 patients with gastrointestinal perforation. This was an unexpected finding because, of course, the data on bevacizumab were very limited. It might make sense to some extent that we know angiogenesis is important for wound healing. So if we interfere with angiogenesis, we might actually interfere with wound healing processes, and this is another side effect that we know. So what are the potential predicting factors in these 6 patients that will allow us to identify patients at risk for these bowel perforation? It's very difficult to get a pattern out of just 6 patients. So what happened after bevacizumab got approved was a large registry to collect more safety data was started in the United States and in Europe. And we now have data on about 4,000 patients prospectively followed with whatever chemotherapy the oncologist considered relevant, plus bevacizumab.
So really, it was just to see how does this play out in a community
How,
setting.
and this is actually more important even than, let's say, randomized trials, because we select our patient for these trials, and these registries now follow real-life patients.
And this was the BRIGHT
The
registry, and
BRIGHT
you
registry.
actually led that effort. What did you see in terms of bowel perforation there?
And reassuringly, the incidence of bowel perforation was again found to be in the range of about 1.5 to 2%. So reassuringly in this regard, because again, these are real-life patients, not select PS01 patients for clinical trials. And we did try to analyze potential predictive risk factors, whatever, for a patient's bowel perforation. And one factor that came out as statistically significantly associated with a higher risk of bowel perforation was intact primary. So when a patient has an intact primary and liver metastasis, lung metastasis, we start on bevacizumab, there's about a risk which is twice as high to develop bowel perforation. It's still in the range of about 3 to 4%. So it doesn't affect the majority of patients, but it is statistically relevant.
So maybe the perforation's occurring at the site of the tumor.
Not all of them, and that's the puzzling factor. So just the presence of a primary tumor can mean that patients might have, let's say, a more extensive disease, peritoneal carcinomatosis, obstruction symptoms, etc., that might actually be another confounding factor for this analysis.
Now, in these patients with colon cancer and bowel perforation, these very few patients, what was the natural course of the perforation? Was it catastrophic or not too bad?
Catastrophic only in the small minority of patients. And in fact, in the initial trial when bevacizumab was tested, there are some patients who actually, after their perforation was managed surgically, continued in bevacizumab because we didn't know and they did fine. So it is a not necessarily lethally catastrophic event, but it's something, of course, that needs surgical attention.